Hello, and welcome to, well, this isn't exactly the TD Gaming Podcast, because we decided to take a week off, and we're going to do one of our, I don't know, semi-annual things in which we talk about something else, and in this case, we're going to talk about Doctor Who. Now, I'm not going to talk about Doctor Who because I don't watch it that much, except for occasionally on Netflix, but we do have two people who really enjoy Doctor Who. One is Scott Dirk, a.k.a. Alpha Shard, and the other is someone who's returning from a long absence, and that's Jennifer Lund.
Hello.
So, yeah. So, you know, it's really good that Paul is gone because, you know, it was really getting tiresome with him, and, you know, he's just so annoying and so self-satisfied and always right. You know, isn't it great not to have to deal with him anymore?
You forgot about his fantastic hearing.
Oh. Oh, hello, Paul. Gee. And it was so long ago that you decided
to... I thought I would just show up in cyberspace and see what you were doing without me, and now I see the smear campaign.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, you know, well, you know, you left as a regular host. We're allowed to, well, we're not going to talk about
it. Right, which means I can pop in whenever the hell I want.
You know what? Paul is Candyman. You know, say his name three times, he's going to show up.
Ooh, I like that one.
You know? He's
he
the Candyman.
Twice, though.
Oh, that's true. Paul, you jumped your lines. I was going to say your name three times before you... Or, you know, it was sort of like Beetlejuice for kids who are...
Yeah.
So also Paul, who's been also a Doctor Who... Wait, Whovian? You call it
Whovian?
Yeah, Whovian, yes.
Who's also Whovian, will also be part of this, even though he left as a regular host, but this is not something regular.
I can't pass up an opportunity to talk about Doctor Who. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So anyways, this is the last you're going to hear of me, and I know those three are probably very happy about that.
It only took 3 years.
Hey, is that how long it took for them to get rid of the... Wait, I don't know, because now... Before I go, do we have another new doctor, or is this the same doctor?
We have a new doctor. Well, it's always the same doctor. It's just a new regeneration.
Well, it's the same one from the previous season.
Okay, let me put it this way. Is there a new actor playing Doctor Who?
Yes, there is a new actor playing the Doctor. His name, by the way, is not Doctor Who, so let's correct that for any of you who may be joining the fandom. It is simply the Doctor.
The Doctor.
Right.
Or if you know him well, Doctor.
And basically, he's a Time Lord. So.
Really well.
And
he
on
might
fair occasions, Professor.
Gallifrey.
Oh. Anyways, this is time for... Now, these three are going to start discussing the past season and perhaps also the premiere, which was last week.
Thank you.
Can we go back to, like, how ridiculous the end of the last season was? Like, the 50th anniversary episode and then Time of the Doctor after that, where, like, it made no sense and it doesn't carry over, like, at all into the season?
Okay, I have four words for you, Paul, that cover a multitude of sins with Doctor Who. Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey.
Okay, fine. Yes, we're going to reverse the polarity of the neutron flow and everything will be fine.
I have four words of my own. I miss the pawns.
Oh.
Oh, I miss the pawns. I do. I really. They were good. You know why? Because they didn't. They didn't have to spend so much time focusing on, like, the villain of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be really pure.
Clara is a bit of a cipher. And I don't, that's not her fault. Jenna Coleman is a perfectly cromulent actress.
I love watching her.
Yeah. Oh, I would love to just have her on a shelf and dress her like a little paper doll. Wow, that sounded creepier than I meant it to. Sorry.
I'm glad you realized it without having it pointed out to you.
She's just not very much as a character. Whereas Amy and Rory, you actually believed that there was a history there.
Mm-hmm. I like
the chemistry. It's just, it almost feels like she regenerated as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Amelia, was the girl who waited. And what is Clara besides the impossible girl?
Yeah, I don't know, but the fact that she's not, the fact and that she's impossible doesn't really carry over into, like, okay, Rose did the impossible. She destroyed all the Daleks, except until the next time they wanted to bring back the Daleks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Every episode of the Daleks lately has been that. Is, let's destroy them all until we meet them next time. Every appearance of the Daleks has been like that.
I'm so over the Daleks.
Same here.
How many times do they even appear in this season?
Too many.
Yeah. At this point, I would almost like to see the Weeping Angels back, and I have a real problem with the Weeping Angels.
I love the Weeping Angels. I wouldn't want to see them back unless they're going to be interesting. Like, the next time we saw them, we learned about, like, how they breed those little cherubs, and they're, like, creepy as all hell, and it, like, expanded, yeah. It expanded what that villain culture is.
Right. Here's, by the way, just as an aside for the Weeping Angel thing, if you are new to the Whovian fandom and you decide to throw yourself into it like I did, I, in fact, presently have the 10th Doctor as my screen background on my phone, and I have a TARDIS phone case and all of that. And I have been looking for new phone backgrounds. Do not, under any circumstances, do a Google image search for Doctor Who wallpaper.
Oh,
unless,
God.
Unless you put in minus angels, because it doesn't, Google in its infinite wisdom does not just serve you up static images. There are some that are GIFs. And you'll be scrolling through, and I was doing this at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, scrolling through, and I saw one of the angels on, you know.
Oh, so you had a little jump scare.
And then I saw a GIF, and it moved, and I may have peed myself just a little bit.
Oh, my God, that sounds amazing.
That's why you specify which doctor, that way you kind of gravitate to what you're looking for instead of the general.
Unfortunately, because you never forget your first doctor, and because Tennant was my first doctor, and Blink was my first episode, I'm home.
Okay. So that would be your suggestion for a first episode for anybody new. Yes, Jennifer?
Sure. Okay. And here's the thing. You don't get an awful lot of the Doctor himself. He only shows up in the show on these tapes, but DVDs.
Well,
sorry.
Yeah, okay. So without spoiling the whole point of it, it gets to focus on other parts of the world and not so much the Doctor himself.
Right, yep. and not even any of the standard companions either. I mean, that was.
We see Martha.
Damn it, I miss David Tennant.
What about you, Alpha? What would be your suggestion for somebody joining Doctor Who for the first time?
I guess I'm kind of weird because, like, when I start something and it's, like, well established, like, there's, like, the middle of the series or whatever, I have to go back to the beginning. I have to start at the beginning and see how the thing evolves because, you know, I just do.
Wow, like the original episode, like 1940-something would be your suggestion?
Oh, 1969.
Well, 66, but yeah.
Oh, 66, sorry.
Yeah.
Fair play. It's just that, and Jordan has dragged me into the black and white era of Who because he has all of them, well, the ones that aren't lost, because the BBC in its infinite wisdom did not see fit to save all of the original.
Yeah, they flat out recorded over some of them too, apparently.
Yeah.
They just were like, nobody wants these. Okay.
Yeah. Who's going to care about this show 50 years from now?
But you know, that happens to, I think, every long-running
Dark Shadows
franchise. I mean, I know that, like, the Disney studios, like, reused the cells from, like, Peter Pan, Alice, and Cinderella because they wiped over them to save money.
Oh, my God. That's like using the Magna Carta for scratch paper.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They took us, my first day working there, they took us on a tour of the studio, and they showed us the tunnels underground the departments. Because those things had to be protected from the heat of California.
Of course.
So there's, like, this really sharp incline where it goes down, like, two stories. And they're like, yeah, this is where Walt's nieces and nephews would, like, take the animation cells that we gave them from whatever work we were working on. I think it was Alice in Wonderland at the time. And they would use them like sleds rampaging down this incline.
What? It was
my favorite part of the tour.
Suddenly I'm getting that image in my head from Who Framed Roger Rabbit of the poor little shoe being dipped in the vat.
Yeah. That's terrible. I mean, wouldn't the child be like, hey, like, wouldn't they want to keep the cell if they saw Peter Pan on it?
Well, no, because they didn't have a concept in that generation the way that we do of, like, saving and preserving everything. That's become our obsession.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, this was the generation, Paul, you were talking. We were talking previously about the pre-war generation, and one of the things that was a thing for these folks was use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without.
I like that. Frankly, we should go back to that a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, which is fine, except that it means that there are lots of things that end up actually being important that don't get saved.
But we still have the films, right? We don't need the individual cells.
Well, no, that's true. No, it's different with animation. No, with the BBC, they really did re-record over top of some of these Who episodes. So
yeah, that's just egregious. But like we didn't need like the set of the original TARDIS just
no, that's
around
true.
Doing nothing for 4 years.
Look if we make that. That's fine.
So anyway, now that I veered us completely off track,
did we want to talk about the individual episodes or just in general?
I just want to toss in my 2 cents for best episode to join on. That would be the first episode of the modern series. It's called Rose.
Oh yeah.
In which we are introduced to this world through the eyes of a newcomer into the Doctor's life.
Yes.
And you could see how fun and exciting it would be to like be part of that world.
Mm-hmm.
Nice to meet you, Rose Tyler. Run for your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
One of my favorite I never cared as much for Eccleston's Doctor, mainly because he seemed a little bit cranky, but the 50th anniversary and the War Doctor and all of that kind of explained why. He wasn't as merry as 10 or 11.
What? I think he had hinted at it throughout the season. Even Tentok, he said he had to basically turn his back on his people and close them away in the time warp. And I think he even said that he felt he killed all his people. So he kind of he would be kind of emo after that.
I don't know. Well, you know, I don't know. I guess for my own personal reasons, I can handle melancholy a whole lot better than I can handle prickly and angry. And Eccleston was still pretty freshly prickly. But one of my favorite exchanges ever came from, I think it was from that first episode, where Rose looks at him and asks him, how come you sound like you come from the north? And he says, a lot of planets have a north.
Yeah, exactly. That was good.
All right. So now that we've like understood each other's preferences a little more, since we haven't all talked about Doctor Who together, let's talk about what a disaster that first episode of this season was with the giant dinosaur in London.
It started so well. The problem
it was
is
all over the place.
It was, but nobody knew. I think a lot of people didn't know what to expect out of Capaldi. I certainly didn't.
I could barely understand a word he said in that whole episode.
He was very hoarse. Very.
Okay, I have to complain about the dialogue in Doctor Who, not because I have any problem understanding the dialogue. But I frequently find myself turning on the closed captioning because of the way the sound is mixed. The ambient noise, the music, whatever else is going on around them.
The dialogue isn't high enough compared to everything else.
Yes, dialogue needs to be turned up better in the mix. And so I frequently find myself missing out on finer points of the plot, and not because I haven't paid attention, but because I haven't heard what people were saying.
And then before you know it, somebody's running again.
And then before you know, someone's running again.
Being blown up or fired.
Or separating themselves from the doctor. Seriously, if I was a companion, I would be stuck to him like glue, and there would be no story.
Well, see, I think I would be tempted to, like, take the TARDIS and go do my own thing for a while and, like, come back and be like, well, I was only gone, like, 30 seconds.
I'd probably get lost in the TARDIS exploring all the stuff that's probably in there.
Probably.
No kidding. Well, certainly his wardrobe needs to be sorted.
I think he does that. I mean, he just has different clothes each time he generates. He probably has like a huge department store, several department stores worth of clothes sitting in there. Half of them probably from his companions.
Oh, yes, and many of them are completely obnoxious. Can we talk about the sweater with the question marks on it?
Oh, do you think he just, like, picked up Gallifrey's, like, entire fashion district and just stuck it in there? He's like, I never know what I might like when I regenerate, so I should be prepared.
Can we also talk about the fact that Peter Capaldi is not the boyfriend doctor anymore, but...
Really?
I like that he said it, but then as the season continued on, it's like he kind of forgot that he said that, you know? Like
he forgot that he said that.
Because he was lying to himself and to her.
And didn't he hug her when he said that, too? Which is an excellent way to hide your face from someone when you're lying to them.
Yeah.
Right, and there's also that moment, I think it's even in the stupid dinosaur episode, when he is saying to her, I'm not your boyfriend, and then later he says she likes older men. And it's like, oh, he transformed into an older man so that she would like him more.
Well, and the hilarious bit was how much grief he was giving her actual boyfriend, whose name, and I feel so
Danny
awful.
Danny Pink,
thank you.
Right, he acted jealous the whole season.
Oh my God, he was so jealous. It was ridiculous.
I wanted to like Danny, but he just got annoying. I don't know. I couldn't get into his character.
Danny could have been a great character, but I don't know, it was interesting. There was sort of a Rose and Mickey kind of dynamic.
Quality, yeah.
I don't feel like he was Mickey, though. Mickey felt like the underdog. Danny just felt like huge chip on his shoulder and going to just take it out of everyone.
Danny felt like he was being lied to, and in fairness, he was.
He was, that's true.
I mean, Clara was absolutely emotionally cheating on him with the Doctor.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of like where the conflict and therefore the interest of that storyline of a companion having a boyfriend not in the loop comes from.
Yeah, I guess that's, yeah.
So no matter, like, if the companion is the most honest person in the world, they'll always justify a reason not to tell their boyfriend just because that's how we're going to drag that storyline out for a couple episodes.
Like, yeah. Like, Rose, it was almost like, it was almost kind of flagrant, like, oh, I like this guy now, and, you know.
Oh, yeah, she's just like, oh, I'm just going to pop off.
Yeah, and Clara was just...
Well, in fairness, if you had Rose Tyler's mom, wouldn't you have popped off for a while?
I love Rose, and I love her mother. Oh. Rose is my favorite companion, I think, still. And, even though, yes, I probably would go on an adventure around the universe if I had Rose's mother, I still love watching both of those actresses.
No, that's true. I love the fact that her mother quite clearly fancied the Doctor.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, he was the kind of Doctor that anyone could fancy, really.
Now hold on, aren't you supposed to say a prayer for Rose, Paul, every time you mention her?
Yes, but we'll collect the number of prayers, and then we're just going to do them all at the end, like when they shouldn't clap during the State of the Union address. We'll just, like, save all the clapping to the end. We'll save all the praying to the end.
Praying?
Well, because she's no longer with us, you see. She's in another dimension. She's trapped there forever. Yes.
Yeah, with her own doctor, her own TARDIS, her mom, her dad, who's rich, and no Mickey. So she has a happy ending. I don't want to hear tragic. No, she has a happy ending. She has a Disney
I liked it better before she had her own copy of the Doctor who was in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it better when she had everything she ever wanted, except the one thing that she wants now.
But now she has it, so...
Yeah, but now she has it, so it's like, let's just
and
make
TARDIS that for frick's sake.
Well, and honestly, if you want to talk about, you know, bittersweet, Amy and Rory got to grow old together. They just did it in a different time away from 11, so...
Right, yeah, but they also had, even if they were terrible at history class, they also had, like, kind of a foreknowledge. It's like, oh... World War I is coming. We should probably start saving money or something.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, Amy got published, the whole bit. No, if you want to talk about companions whose ends were completely tragic.
Like actors? Just,
oh, please.
What? That is tragic. It's dying.
Oh, which companion was it from the old set that had like four different origin stories, and they just kept showing different like, oh, this is where she comes from, and like nobody really knows. It was the Wolverine of the series.
Oh,
I'm trying to remember which companion it was that was just straight up left behind on a planet to die, and I can't remember if it was Pam or I don't remember her name.
Okay.
Has a companion ever, like, just chosen to stay where they were and just, like, leave the Doctor? It's like, back to bring you to a better place?
Yes.
Martha walked away from the Doctor because she got tired of pining.
Right, but she also got returned to her own place and time.
No, that's true.
Mel was off somewhere else.
The tragic one is Donna. Always Donna.
Yeah, that was.
Because she can't even remember.
She can't remember, and I mean, seriously, you know, 10 gives himself up saving her grandfather. I mean, come on.
And you know, not for nothing, that dynamic between a woman of a certain age traveling with the Doctor, rather than like these young ingenues that have been recently. It really brought out, like, the only time that we've seen a best friend dynamic as opposed to...
That was refreshing, yes.
As opposed to, like, this either love interest or father figure or maybe, like, an older brother. But it's like, how about just, like, two rational, capable adults having fun together because they're best friends?
Yes, yeah. I still, speaking of the whole best friend bit, my very favorite scene between Ten and Donna was the bit where they're in the office building looking at each other through the windows.
Oh, yeah, when they get reunited and they're like, what are you doing here?
And they're mouthing to each other, and the whole thing is completely silent, and you can still hear every word they're saying.
Yeah, I remember laughing my ass off at that.
I loved when I heard her mouth like, oh my God. It was so funny.
And you could just, and the funny thing is that she enunciates it so clearly that you can absolutely hear it.
Yeah. You know, yeah, you hear her voice. You've heard it before.
Yeah. So, I mean, we keep coming back to the doctors and the companions that we love. And I think part of this is because we're not used to Capaldi yet.
I'm not sure I care for him at all, really.
You know, that's
mumbling aside.
That's how I felt about him through most of last season. And it wasn't until we got to the end and it was really going towards the whole, you know, him and Clara basically admitting to each other, or maybe past each other, that they were lying to each other.
Well, let's build up to that. So the next episode was the mandatory Dalek episode of the season.
Yeah.
All right. So they find again the last of the Daleks, and they find a reason for him to mind meld with the Doctor. Right. He's supposedly a good Dalek because he's sort of malfunctioning. So they go inside to fix him and to figure out. Were they trying to figure out, like, what he was malfunctioning so that they could use
it? Yeah, they were trying to figure out what the malfunction was. And according to the synopsis, there was a crack that he had to fix. And once the crack was fixed, the Dalek remembered what he was and started going, okay, you got to kill. And then the Doctor mind melds with him and then sees the hate in the Doctor for the Dalek. And the Dalek decides, okay, killing my whole race, just like Khan did. And so I guess he kills some of the Daleks, but not all of them, because you know they're going to appear later on. That's the end of that.
I didn't care for this either. Well, first of all, the Daleks are not my favorite. But it's also like this particular meeting with the Daleks just felt like kind of mismatched. It seems like the story structure was really off about like the percentage of time that we're going to spend doing different things, like, you know, encountering the Dalek that's broken, you know, and the act where we're inside trying to fix the Dalek. And what does that look like? It just felt like the balance was really off there and it was really hard to care about what was going on.
Well, I think that this whole last season was a bit off kilter because, again, we have a new, you know, we have a regeneration, and this Doctor seems to, his through line seems to be figuring out whether he's, you know, it's the whole conscience kind of thing.
I think this mirrors the Ninth Doctor's episode with the Dalek, where Rose first meets a Dalek with the Ninth Doctor. And it's like it's all chained up, and it's almost similar in that way because it was a broken Dalek. It's, you know, just doesn't really seem to remember who it is, and the Ninth Doctor is like yelling at it and showing his anger. So you just see this continued in the 11th Doctor.
Part of what we're running into as well is that we as the audience don't have to be reintroduced to this whole big wide world and the whole universe and all of time and space.
That's true. They kind of took care of that, like in Rose's year, where it's like, right. It's like, oh, we're gaining an entire new generation of watchers with a deliberate effort to modernize this beloved franchise.
So Rose's first season, even though I didn't much care for Eccleston, it was still, you know, let's show everybody all of time and space. Where do you want to go? So it wasn't just the villain of the week. It was also the alien or the rubber monster of the week. It was, you know, the face of Bo and moisturize me and are you my mummy and all of this stuff. where now we've seen, you know, lots and lots of all of time and space. And so now it's kind of getting a little bit more insular, and it's becoming more about the Doctor again.
I think it's becoming a little bit more lost in that respect, because we understood Eccleston's portrayal of this character in its own very unique way. And I'm having trouble doing that with Peter's version of it.
I know.
I thought you guys were going to go on how it's becoming like Lost, the TV show.
I'm sorry.
It feels like in learning about the reactions of the Doctor when we were first encountering aliens like the Daleks, for those of us who started then, we got a better sense of that character. And since we're no longer taking the time to explain like who the Daleks are, we don't get to see like how Peter's reaction in that character is different.
Well, so speaking of Daleks, Paul, this is where we get to the spoiler, sweetie, portion of of today's festivities.
They promised all to be very kind in pointing out when spoilers might come for last night's premiere.
Yes. Well,
which I'll be watching after this podcast.
Right. So last night was the second part. So the last night and last week were a whole story, self-contained.
Okay.
Worth the price of admission alone for seeing the Doctor rolling up to an axe fight, playing his own guitar, wearing shades. Oh my God. I knew that Peter Capaldi was a distinguished looking gentleman. I never knew that Peter Capaldi was fucking hot, like seriously smoking.
Well, that's a reason to go watch.
I'm sorry, you know.
Badass.
I'm gonna go look.
And here's the thing, because Peter Capaldi was actually in a rock band with Craig Ferguson back in the day, he does his own playing. So yeah, that was not dubbed in, boys and girls. He did that himself.
So what did you guys think of this particular Dalek episode?
I don't know. I mean, the Daleks are – I think I've rationalized them myself as a Star Trek fan. I got used to the whole, you know, rubber monster of the week because I got pulled into Star Trek with the original series from the 60s.
Right. And
had a lot of the same sensibility of the very early Doctor Who with the production values and all of that. And the disposable, dependable villain that they could always pull out if they needed somebody and they couldn't think of anything were the Klingons. So as far as the Doctor is concerned, the Daleks are like the Klingons.
Yeah.
They're the standard villain.
I'm a next generation Star Trekkie, so to me, the Daleks and the Cybermen are a lot like the Borg. And
Yes, that too.
I liked how they had Hugh on the Next Generation to show that, you know, that was one of the examples of the Borg being able to grow beyond and out of that brainwashed mentality that they were in. So when I see this episode and this Dalek has been basically a good Dalek, just like the Master in the previous seasons with the Tenth Doctor. He could be good. So when the memory comes back of his previous life or existence, shouldn't that conflict in his mind with what he wants to be? And maybe it did, because that's why he killed the Daleks.
Oh, yeah, and he should be tormented.
Yeah. So it's just I thought his existence as Rusty should have still have an effect, and maybe it did. It just, I guess, I wished for something else, but yeah.
This is where the premiere comes in handy, because the Dalek in the second episode was asking, "Am I a good Dalek?" when they were trying to fix him.
Mm-hmm.
And in the premiere, we get the parallel of the doctor asking him, am I a good man?
Yeah.
Which just about broke my heart. And it's like, oh, seriously? I mean, you know, he's been dealing with this self-doubt for, you know, well, since Eccleston. And Eccleston just stuffed it down, and Tennant was just, oh, I'm going to run around in a trench coat and tennis shoes, and we'll be very jolly, and I love Rose, and we're
right, but he was still running away from all of that.
Yeah, he was the, and then Eleven comes along, and he's the manic pixie dream doctor, and you know, squashes it down that way. And now I think his emotional chickens have come home to roost a bit.
I think both Eleven and Ten were emotional at times. They definitely had guilt.
They were just working really hard at squishing it down.
Honestly, I'm kind of disappointed because what I thought this season, that season 8 was going to be about him looking for Gallifrey, and it doesn't seem like that was happening at all this season.
Well, okay, but I have a question. Is this like, there's only 13 episodes of this season, quote unquote, yeah, season. Are they still doing like 13 episodes at the beginning of 2015 and 13 episodes
so, yeah,
at the end of 2015? So it's, yeah, like really, so it's like really it's the first half of season 8. Am I getting it? Like the Christmas special is just like demarking like,
yeah,
a halfway point?
Well, the Christmas special, I think, is the marking the start of a new season.
Really? Okay. I get confused with the Brits and the way they chop things up.
Yeah.
I'll never understand it until I see it lined up for me on Netflix.
Right. You can do a search, Paul. There's a graphic that I happened across where it's Peter Capaldi superimposed onto an image with all of the titles for this season. They've all been released. I don't know that we have synopses for all the episodes.
Oh, we do.
But we have titles.
I have a synopsis thing that I've been looking at. It's on Wikipedia, actually.
Okay.
I'll post it in chat so you guys can look at it.
And then next up, we had that Robin Hood episode.
Yeah, which is really, 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 really bad.
Oh, come on. It was hilarious.
I'm neutral on it. It had a lot of good things going for it, but it was also really tedious.
So when you say a Robin Hood episode, it starts making me think of that Q episode in Star Trek Next Generation,
yeah,
when,
yes,
Worf
says
he's not a merry man.
Yes, and Capaldi basically pulls that out. He's Worf in this episode, where instead of going along with all of this, it's like, wait, this is all crap.
Right, so they literally show up and meet Robin Hood and the Merry Men, and he spends the entire episode pointing out things like, you look like you're wearing a Renaissance fair costume.
Yeah,
and the bit where they're locked up together, you know, imprisoned and arguing back and forth with each other was just about the most adorable thing we got to see all season last year.
It had some really funny moments. I liked the visual differentiation from the rest of the season and how, like, it really was an excuse for what's her name?
Jenna Coleman.
Jenna Coleman. Thank you. I almost said Jenna Elfman. It was an excuse for Jenna to run around in a ball gown for an episode, which was great. Like, it was just fun to look at. Not really to watch, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. It was like some kids, some girls cooked up idea of, you know, the Princess Bride mashed up with, you know, some half remembered Robin Hood stuff. Yeah.
and you know, science, because, you know, boys, whatever, like we'll get them in there too, right?
It's something like that. The doctor, I think, was speaking for those in the audience who are of a more analytical bent.
But I mean, I could forgive it if it was entertaining, but it just kind of, I don't know, something about it left me feeling a little cold. And then after that was something that was more important was an episode entitled Listen, where it's all about why do we talk to ourselves out loud. And I really was curious, Jennifer, to get your take on it, because it seemed to me to be such a rehashing and poor execution of the idea that made the Weeping Angels brilliant.
Well, okay, and refresh my memory here. Wasn't this the one that ended with
she found out that it's actually him as a boy. Instead of telling him, hey, I found the planet, she just says...
And she's hiding under the bed or something.
Yeah, scares him.
On Gallifrey, right.
But that's the secret point of the episode, right? She accidentally finds Gallifrey and doesn't tell him.
Yeah.
Right.
Because she has inserted herself into his past.
Right. And I guess she figures that she's... that if she says anything that, I don't know, that it, like, violates the...
Timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, yeah.
Well, the wibbly-wobbly prime directive kind of thing, I guess.
Like that's ever stopped them before, you know, like that ever stopped Rose or the... You know,
well,
like,
I wonder how much of this is Clara being, what, somewhat selfish that... that she's going on these adventures and she wants to be able to keep going on these adventures.
Yes. We also meet Orson Pink in this episode, probably a descendant of Danny Pink. But
it tries to explore. This was a very cheaply done episode. Not that it was, but it was like they were definitely saving money on like CGI. So it really focuses really on like these three actors carrying this whole story. The monster of the week, if you know, is something that its entire thing is that it is the perfect hider. So no one has ever seen it. So how do we know that it's actually a thing and it's always behind us? And sometimes it lives under the bed.
Yeah.
And like it just seems like a bunch of storylines that got pulled together that didn't need to be there, because you're right, we meet Danny's descendant and you know at the end of the universe, and there are these creatures out there that we never see, but they're not what the doctor is looking for, which turns out to be Jenna.
Right.
Whatever her name is.
It's a wasted episode because it really doesn't build up to anything, or at least we don't. I don't know. It goes nowhere, really.
Yeah, I mean, it was really. I felt like it was a waste of my time, frankly.
Well, I think the idea here was that they needed a way to remind everybody that Gallifrey is still out there, that it's maybe a pocket universe, but that it's still there, and that the Doctor isn't really the last of the Time Lords anymore. And you know, there you go.
But it didn't make that connection strong enough for me. Like, I had to get confirmation on that thought from you two.
No, that's true. And have we, in all of those, in all of these episodes, we've gotten to Missy, haven't we?
No, not yet.
Oh, not yet. Okay.
Oh, yeah. We've seen her, glimpses of her. So there's this, you know, for anyone.
She does show up in the first episode.
Yeah, so there's like. I'm sorry. I keep cutting you off, and it's a pet peeve of mine.
No, I'm sorry. Hang on, which episode is it with a robot restaurant?
That's
the first one. There's that robot restaurant with a dinosaur in the city for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow, talk about all over the place. Yeah, that's right.
It was stupid. It was so horrifying. It was stupid. Well, I mean, it was 77 minutes, but it was stupid. So, but there was a scene with this mysterious woman welcoming people to the afterlife.
Yeah.
Yes.
And variations of it pop up throughout the season as kind of a teaser towards the finale.
Well, right, and they never really did pay that off, the whole afterlife thing, which I was annoyed by because of what happens to Danny, so, you know.
I think they do show you what it is, what it really is.
They explain it, but it feels like a missed opportunity, a letdown. Like, they built up so much curiosity that it was like, oh, wait, that's the answer? Yeah, all right, well, okay. I guess you had to do something with it. Time Heist was next, where they're robbing the most secure bank in the universe.
I like that.
That was a fun episode.
Yes.
And I think it was a satisfying ending, too. I liked. Nice little twist there.
I think it might be my favorite episode of the entire season. Just because it was so well contained. It ends on a good note. You know, Clara's running around, you know, holding her own. Peter actually starts making sense. It's just, I think it's the best one, frankly.
Yeah, there's no Danny Pink, so yeah.
Yeah, there's no Danny Pink. We don't need to waste screen time on him.
Yeah, exactly. Oh.
Now, I saw this episode a couple of months ago in which I don't know who she was, but she met her older self, and the older self had to sacrifice herself, but she didn't want to because they were both in love with the same guy.
That sounds like that's,
you know, they're in that room and, you know, they had the disease.
That sounds like the time that Amy got stuck on that quarantine.
Yeah,
the quarantine one.
Right. That's not Time Heist.
No, but that was a couple of seasons ago, Jonah. But you're right. That's a good episode to see.
Yes, that was an excellent one. It's like, I don't care that you grew old. I care that I didn't grow old with you. That was just awesome.
God. Yeah.
That's why I miss Rory. It's like, God damn, he had awesome lines.
And yes, it seems like Jenna isn't getting those kinds of opportunities to shine as an actress.
Yeah.
I agree.
I mean, like in Time Heist, for example, she's just kind of bopping along as like a sidekick.
Well, I did like her having the moxie to basically be the doctor.
Yeah, that comes in later, though, in the season.
Up next was
when in the caretaker episode, where the doctor is playing the new school janitor at Clara's high school.
Yes.
Yeah. I hated it.
This is where it gets really annoying.
I liked how her juggling her time traveling and her boyfriend just kind of all collapsed in her face, but that was in the first like 5 minutes of the episode, and then it just went to crap from there.
Because Danny's acting like freaking the doctor is some sort of Machiavellian manipulating psychopath or something, and I mean, he is crazy and he kidnaps people, but it's like.
Alfred, here's the thing. Danny's having the real reaction that anybody would actually have to somebody who swans along and, you know, comes in and just monopolizes someone else's time like that in ways that can't be explained.
I'm sorry, continue, Jennifer. I didn't mean
to. Clara's not going to say out loud, oh yeah, by the way, I get to go on adventures through time and space with an alien who's 900 years old.
I think there are previous doctors, though, that had that more real reaction, so I understand what you mean. Because there were previous companions that didn't go gaga, you know, looking at him and just put on rose-shaped glasses and not see him for what he was or, you know, what he was doing. But Danny just, oh my God, he just like had a major chip on his shoulder, and I know why. So I guess maybe
because,
it makes sense.
I mean, it's because really Clara's essentially, he's acting that way because Clara essentially is cheating on him.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not romantically, but she has this entire area of her life that she's deliberately hiding from him.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have worked out really great, except that they chose to like set it in the crappy high school for some stupid reason. It's the whole waste.
I don't know. It seems like it's, you know, turnabout is fair play, that the companions always get to come along into the Doctor's world, but the Doctor never really comes into the companions' world, not so much.
Did they have to make her world so goddamn boring?
Well, in the original series,
It's not like it's Glee, come on.
The third Doctor
put her in a Glee school? That would have been so much more interesting. Let that be the thing that they're trying to figure out. Why the hell are all these kids singing suddenly?
That would have been interesting.
We've always do it this way.
Especially.
Oh, dear God.
Okay, and now you're doing a Buffy episode in which everybody starts singing.
That would be funny, though. That would be an opportunity to do something different, do something memorable, and poke fun at yourself.
The third Doctor spent a lot of time on Earth, so it's not too unusual.
He lost his powers, so he was stuck with the Lieutenant.
Yeah. Sarah Jane. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Sarah Jane. She's dead now.
Yes.
Oh, too soon, Paul. Jesus.
Says that so
clear.
Okay.
But she is. In case you didn't know, the actress is no longer with us.
Yes,
all very sad
I know. It's very sad. And so are the first three Doctors. They're all dead.
Sarah was so popular, she had her own spin-off show where she teaches her son about science.
That was cool.
It was cool, but it was also like, wow, I forgot that there were 9 planets in our solar system.
It was clearly, this was a little kid's show, Paul. Come on.
Not anymore.
But she was that popular.
Okay.
Next up was Kill the Moon.
Yeah, I had some issues with that particular episode, and Alpha, you're going to have to excuse me because you said you didn't want this to turn into Politicast, but this
you
episode...
You have exactly 20 seconds.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I ever want to see another metaphor for abortion or any other hot button issue ever on Doctor Who.
That's what you took away from it?
I didn't think of it like that, but yeah.
Oh man, I'm so glad to have a woman's perspective on this. Go for it, Jen.
Yeah.
It was the whole pro-choice thing. You know, the moon is an egg. And, if it hatches, what's going to happen? Oh, well, we can fix that.
Well, see, I thought of it as like a counter at Farpoint, where the alien was trapped under the station and Q was, testing Picard to see how he would handle this alien.
Hold on. The alien wasn't underneath the station in Encounter in Farpoint.
Yes, it was.
It was the station.
It was the station.
Okay, really, the minutia of things like that don't take away from the core of the theme.
Yeah. What are you going to do, Picard? Are you going to kill it? Are you going to let it live? What are you going to do? You know.
Right. But it wasn't clear in this episode that this was a test. It was really a thing.
See, and I felt like this is they did this kind of thing before with the lizard people where they put all of this weight onto the companion's shoulders. Like, okay, you're going to decide the fate of your world right now. It's like, oh my God, what the fuck? Really, seriously, you're deciding the fate of millions
it's a cheap way to raise the emotional stakes.
I mean, it's like, who was the companion at the time? I think it was Martha, and then, I don't remember who, maybe it was Jenna, jeez, who was, back, I don't remember who the companion was at the time, but it was just like, who is this person to decide this right now?
It was Amy Pond, that when we met the lizard
people. Maybe it was Amy, you're gonna put all this responsibility on her shoulders to pick which landmass the lizard people are gonna go to, you know, it's like, it was never gonna go. It was ridiculous.
And so when that happens, I'm not really sure if it's just the Doctor running away from having to make, a decision that could be terrible the way that he did on Gallifrey.
I think I'm going to give you that. Yeah, I agree with you there, I think. He doesn't want to make that decision. He doesn't want to be the one that says that people go, well, you decided, and then you'd have to have that way. So that really is kind of shitty.
Well, right.
Especially because time is wibbly-wobbly, you know, if they had screwed up at that point in history, all of the future things we would have seen would have evaporated, and humanity would not be as anything as we've ever seen it, which has usually been pretty good.
Right. And you want to talk about him running away. I mean, we go back to Eccleston again, you know, the whole Are You My Mummy, where, you know, it's the one time that he made me cry, where the kid, you know, the girl tells the boy who she really is. And then he looks at Rose and he says, just this once, they all live.
Yeah, and that's part of, I think, what made that a good and memorable episode. Not just because it had that creepy tagline, but because it left with such a positive feeling, which is the same thing that this Kill the Moon episode did for me. It was like, you made the right decision. Earth's going to be fine. Everything's okay. This is a good day for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I wish they hadn't done the metaphor with an egg and two women. That's all.
I can't believe that I didn't even see it that way.
I didn't think about it that way either.
But then again, I probably got creeped out by the giant spiders coming out of the moon.
Yeah.
No, okay, yeah, that was a little much.
I guess that was its immune system. I think that's what they said, even that that's its immune system.
It was a parasite feeding on the shell of the egg.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't the main problem. I mean,
yeah, there's a precedent for that because damn nature, you scary.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's probably what it was. Something had to make that situation scarier.
Right.
Because otherwise they would, what would they do? They would show us tidal waves and stuff?
Right.
I don't know. But after that was the mummy on the train.
Which I thought was a much better episode.
Yeah.
I like how it was a puzzle that needed to be figured out, and then there was a satisfying conclusion, and then we got that, and the episode was over.
Yeah. I like that stuff where you can mentally figure out puzzles. That's what Doctor Who should be about. Is mental puzzles of solving things, not which thing do you kill or not kill. Just, you know, just figure something out. And that's what he figured out on this one. Is I think it was actually a soldier that was still thinking it was on duty to kill things or whatever and relieved
right,
it.
Right, like almost like a golem of Jewish legend.
Mm.
But
oh,
like
yeah.
Out of a person.
Oh, yes, that's perfect analogy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, fun episode. Again, lots of different stuff to look at as opposed to, like, the hyper-gritty, gritty, everything's covered in gravel kind of look that we've gotten for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in this episode and the previous one, I think Clara was really feeling distant from the Doctor. Like, she didn't know who he was or couldn't stand the kind of decisions he had to make or do. And she seems to have a really hard time wanting to be friendly with him, because like the 11th Doctor was so approachable. The 12th doesn't feel as approachable.
Well, I think she got to change that opinion a bit when she became the Doctor in the following episode, Flatline.
Mm.
Right. Well, and was this the one where the TARDIS got shrank?
This is the one where the TARDIS is shrinking from the outside. The inside is still the same dimensions because, you know, Time Lord science. So it's still infinitely large on the inside. And on the outside, it's about a foot tall, and Clara spends half the episode holding it, walking it around.
Yes. I love the bit with the hand coming out.
Yeah. I mean, there are tons and tons of visual gags that just kept the whole thing funny and moving forward.
Why not have a I Dream of Genie theme to it, you know?
It kind of did have an I Dream of Genie thing going on there.
Yes.
Because, like, because she sticks the whole TARDIS, like, in her purse at one point, and the Doctor, like, hands her out an axe, so she just pulls out this giant thing from, like, she has a Mary Poppins moment.
A little bag of holding.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. It was great.
I find it interesting that it's the English who've come up with the concept of bigger on the inside.
I wonder what you could say sexually about them.
Oh, dear Lord. I really wasn't going there.
I'm just saying. So, yeah, fun episode. Doesn't really have anything to do with, I don't know, the universe as a whole. But I think it was just, again, probably my second favorite episode. I'm just getting to watch something fun with these characters and science and all this stuff.
Doctor Who should be fun.
I like this line where she asks if she was a good doctor, and he tells her that she was an exceptional doctor, but goodness had nothing to do with it.
Ooh, good line. Good line. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Because that's not the doctor's job, to be good.
It's to make the tough decisions.
Right.
Well, and it's interesting that the whole goodness thing, again, that seems to be a through line with this doctor, because we got that line again from Missy in the first episode, you know, in the premiere of this season, where she's sitting at the cafe with Clara.
No, I didn't turn good. I can't do that accent.
I love the way really she said that.
Her Scottish accent really came out.
No, I didn't suddenly turn good.
Yeah, exactly.
So Missy is in the premiere of the current season?
Yes.
Oh,
I'm excited already. I don't want to ruin it until we reveal who she is. But yeah, next up was The Forest of the Night. What a lame episode. I wanted to kill myself.
Oh, is that the
forest one? Just suddenly appears in the middle of London.
And like, Danny is parading around with the kids, and that was so annoying.
Yeah, it's like they feel like it was cool to see visually kind of like the statues, like what the earth might look like if the forest just suddenly took it over. Like with the ruins and stuff all over the place.
Right. But,
I mean, there was like four enjoyable minutes in this whole episode. And it's like the explanation part at the end.
One of the enjoyable moments was the continuing curmudgeonliness of Capaldi's doctor. He is just this cranky, crotchety, crusty old dude who really just doesn't have – he barely has time for Clara, never mind for middle schoolers.
I think if you didn't like the political message in that other one, there's the political message in this one of don't destroy the trees.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Why do I never see this stuff? But yeah, I think my problem with Peter might be that if he's going to be curmudgeon-y, he's not curmudgeon-y enough. He doesn't hate everything enough.
Here's the thing.
I would want him to be mean to those children.
Oh, see, you can't do that with the doctor. And I don't think that he even wants to be that way. He reminds me.
You can feel bad about it afterwards, but I mean, we can interject some humor there by him doing some. Well, perhaps not to children. Fine, maybe that's going too far. But like, he could do some kind of not nice things to adults he doesn't like, or that he thinks are stupid.
He kind of does to Danny. He keeps calling him a gym teacher, even though he's a math teacher.
Yeah, but that doesn't come across as deliberate. That comes across as like forgetful, or at least unconcerned.
Yeah.
No, it's deliberate. Clara corrected him more than once about what Danny taught, and
he doesn't care enough about Danny to remember.
No, if you paid attention to the way he was talking to Clara and talking to her about Danny specifically, it was
I think I remember him being a gym teacher. He can't be a math teacher. He doesn't look like a math teacher. He must be a gym teacher. Like, he argued with her about it.
Yeah, he argued with her about it. And, you know, it was quite clearly, this guy isn't good enough for you. Why are you hanging out with him?
Because he thought Clara was going to go after the math teacher. There was a math teacher there that had a bow tie and glasses and looked kind of like Matt
Smith.
Yes,
oh my God.
Oh, jeez, I didn't even see that. I see nothing when I watch this show.
The casting sheet for that must have been hilarious. You know, come dressed in your very best Matt Smith cosplay.
Yep.
Yeah, the only, I mean, seriously, the guy had, you know, the tweedy pants and the suspenders and the bow tie. And, you know, the only thing missing was the floppy hair and a fez.
And the look on Capaldi's face was just like, oh, Clara, you know, like he's just in fear or something. Like it just makes him happy, you know, to think that. And, oh, you silly girl, you still like him. And it just falls flat on his face when he finds out, no, she likes Danny, and then he gets all pissy.
Right, exactly.
Right. Well, I might have caught more of that if either the forest episode or the high school episode were entertaining to watch closely.
Yeah, there's still...
See, now that's the kind of thing the doctor could say if Peter wants to be curmudgeon-y. But we've arrived. We finally arrived at the two-part finale of the first half of season 8. The one in which the Doctor meets Missy.
Well, okay. I wouldn't. In light of some of the things that we've seen since then, I'm not sure that we would say meet.
Well, okay, fine, but this is the first time we see these two actors together.
This is true.
So remembering that time is wibbly wobbly, it's a lot of fun because, Missy misrepresents herself as being an android at for all intents and purposes, a futuristic kind of graveyard.
Right.
That the Doctor kind of ends up in. It starts off with a wonderful moment. Clara's boyfriend dies.
You are so mean.
Alex the Cub.
I felt really bad that, you know, they were having this conversation and all of a sudden he's road pizza. Come on, you guys.
But it was done so well. Like, I was really, like, I cared about his death more than I cared about his life.
Yeah, the way they did it was rather dramatic. Like, she's like, Danny, are you there? And it's just silence, or you hear noise, and then suddenly you hear hello, and this woman says, I picked up his phone, this man, he was in the road, and he got hit, and then it's just, oh my God. And you're thinking, but didn't we see Orson Pink? What does this mean?
But it's,
right.
It's more impactful than that, though, because they're on the phone talking,
and she's about to
and
drop
she says,
the
I love you for the first time,
yeah.
And then there's
yeah.
silence.
Yeah.
Dead.
I remember that, yes.
Like, that was like, I thought it was going to go somewhere really boring and predictable, and it surprised me.
Yeah.
So they go looking to the futuristic cemetery to try to, you know, bring Clara a little peace. No, to bring him back to life. She's like, you will do what you are told, and you will save my boyfriend. Okay, great. It's nice to see her having an emotion about something.
Yeah,
and that's how they ended up meeting Missy.
She actually did crank up her wiles on the Doctor for that, didn't she?
She did. It was. She acted for a few moments. It was great.
Oh wow!
No, I mean, that was like you could tell that like to dredge up something that emotionally raw, like you could see someone at their craft, which is admirable in a great way and much more entertaining than what she's been mostly made to do this season, which is act in such a way where her talent is hidden.
Okay, fair enough. Please, yeah, I hate to leave anybody thinking that we think she's a bad performer. She's not.
Absolutely not. But it's definitely like a school of thought of like, in the same way that like you can't tell how a magician is doing their tricks if you're watching a good magician.
That's true.
So that's kind of what it's like. But this is like that moment of like, you will save my boyfriend was like, that was entering like Meryl Streep category.
Yeah.
So it turns out that Missy is who? Who is Missy? Somebody tell me.
The Master.
The Master. Time Lords can regenerate into opposite genders.
So this is the second time that we've had a surprise Master reveal himself like this. The first time was with that old man. He's like, say my name, the Master. So now we have him in female form, and she is really a good actress.
She is. I mean, she's. I think her and Clara need to have more scenes together.
Oh, you are so gonna love the premiere, Paul.
I'm waiting for that website. So apparently the Master is back, and she's changed her name to Missy because of gender pronouns. And so she, you know, she wanted to change from Master to Mistress, and she thought that sounded a little S&M-y. So she's now Missy. Love her. So much fun. Crazy as all get out.
Oh, yeah. Completely mental.
Which is exactly the character, right? Like, saw the core of what time is and went crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. But, so Missy has teamed up with the Cybermen to not destroy all of humanity, but apparently, it turns out, to give the Doctor the gift of his own private army.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, it took us a long time to get to that point, by the way.
Right. And that's what the whole afterlife was, which, you know, all of those scenes kept being, like, ultra creepy.
Right. So apparently, like, all of the times that we've seen her before, she was pointing out to people how they were dead now, and their consciousness is inside a Time Lord external hard drive, frankly.
Yeah, that was insane.
So it's like the afterlife is just a simulation running on a computer somewhere. It made me think of one of my favorite episodes of The Next Generation, where Moriarty is good and leaves the holodeck with Countess Regina. Ah!
Regina, I thought it was.
Yeah, but did she not pronounce it the other way?
Maybe. It's been a while.
But I just thought that was, like, really... Because, again, the solution is put somebody in a computerized simulation, and if they don't know it, they can live out their lives happily.
Yeah. It does seem like a good alternative.
But, yeah, that's how they made the Cybermen this time around.
Yes.
Yes.
We don't want to spoil the premiere for you, Paul. But you're gonna really like this one.
I thought the whole finale of season 8, I think, was rather emotional. That the last hour.
It was emotional. I mean, the Doctor couldn't save what's his name, the gym teacher.
Danny.
Yeah, Danny. Danny died. Danny also sucked. Yeah, Danny sacrifices himself for the boy that he accidentally killed, so that at least explains why, at least one of the reasons why he was so cranky during the season. And I think it at least gives something for the character to leave off on. And I like that he sacrificed himself, and it's like, that's it, you know, no tricks, no nothing. This is, you know, a real sacrifice.
I want them to not repeat the Rose mistake and let's never see him again.
You know, you don't have to discuss the finale because we've got plenty of material here.
That was the finale.
Oh, never mind. Okay.
Yes.
That was it. We're done.
I mean the premiere. I'm sorry. You don't have to discuss the premiere because we have enough material.
Well, Paul doesn't want to be spoiled, so we're going to leave him for a surprise. And the second episode is out, too.
So what? Just wrap it up now. That's all.
And you need those first two together because they're one coherent story. Although I will say that it was pretty hilarious to see Nick Frost as Santa in the Christmas episode.
Which Nick Frost? The Nick Frost from Shaun of the Dead, or the Nick Frost from
Nick Frost?
No, well, there's no. He was the opposite in at the World's End, where he was the responsible one.
Yes.
And he was still funny, but...
Yeah. Well, the one thing I didn't like about that was the whole fake-out. Like, they had her old and everything, and then suddenly they changed it so that way he can actually get her back young. It was just annoying how they did that. Like, oh, genocide, she actually wants to stay on the show.
Yeah, timey-wimey spaceball, come on.
Yeah.
Okay, you realize, the two of you, don't you, that that at the end of this season, she's done.
Yeah, yes, she is actually done.
Here's my problem. I am a little tired of not being able to get to know some of these characters
well
and as consistently as I would like. I want someone to sign a 3-season contract as the Doctor and a 3-season contract as his companion, and maybe they don't overlap so that we can have some emotional play on the changes Doctor and the companion, but...
Paul just wants Rose back.
No, I don't. I'm just tired of not being able to care about any of these characters.
Paul just wants
Rose back.
If Jenna's going to leave, I wish her well, and I will enjoy her performances until she goes, but I want the next companion to be signed up for a 3-season run, and then whenever Peter decides that he wants to go or, you know, is unable to continue, then we can replace him and still keep one of the elements on the show going. And then have the next Doctor also sign a 3-year contract.
I think at the moment, Jenna will be the longest running modern companion. I believe that's what I've been reading.
No, that doesn't make sense.
That was the Pond, wasn't it?
Apparently it's going to be Jenna. She finishes the season.
Are we talking like in the chronological time that it takes for the episodes to come out? Or in number of episodes?
I think they mean number of episodes because, I mean, she was on with Matt Smith, and then she's been on at least one season with Capaldi, and this is going to be her second season.
But that's she was only on for half a season with Matt Smith.
I guess it was half? Okay.
She was only on for half of, like, an American season.
Yeah. Right, it was that.
But, like, okay. I think Rose was on for 3 years. I think the Ponds were on for 3 years.
Right, because Rose started with Capaldi, and then she was, what, 2 seasons with 10?
Rose started with Eccleston.
Yeah, and that was 1 season with 10, and then she was out, and he went with Martha for his second season.
Oh, wait, you're right. Rose had 2 seasons. Martha had 2 seasons.
Donna had what, 2 seasons?
One, I thought.
I think Donna had 1.
Wow, okay, so it was Donna. Yeah, that's right, because Donna was 10's last season. And then we got Amy and Rory, Amy first with 11.
Yeah, Amy or Rory came pretty quickly with them. It was just, you know, he started out with Amy first.
But, like, I didn't know anything about Time Lords when I started watching, and so I was completely thrown off when Chris Eccleston left the show, and the only thing that made that change of actors or character believable to me was that there was still this continual presence of the same companion.
Yeah,
and now seeing how she reacts to him differently was the interesting part of the show. So if we're going to do that again, great, but let's do it so that we can get to know people a little bit better before they go.
The problem with getting to know people, it isn't just how long they stick around. It's the material that they're given.
So let's hire better writers.
Yeah.
I understand Moffat can't write every episode by himself, but like...
Can we get Russell T. Davies back, please?
Oh my God. Awesome.
Let Stephen Moffat be a showrunner. And get some other people to write.
I think we should end on that note.
Okay.
So anyways, maybe there'll be a part 2 soon after Paul sees the premiere. And
well, yes, but then we'll only have 1 episode to talk about.
Yeah, maybe we'll wait until...
We're going to need a couple more episodes.
Yeah, okay, so we'll wait until the halfway season mark after Christmas.
We'll see what Christmas brings.
Yes. Yeah. I think that would be fabulous.
Okay. Well, we will see you next week with episode 401. I hope you enjoyed the Doctor Who special episode, which comes every so often.
Now here's the list of all the Doctor Who episodes. All of them.
No.
Ever?
No. Yep. We will not include that in this podcast. Episode.
He's texting it to us.
Yeah.
No, I think he was going to list off verbally the title of every episode.
That would take 20 minutes.